Welcome to WMKV Health Scope, a weekly discussion of health and wellness issues for older adults, their families, and caregivers. This call-in program is presented by 89.3 WMKV. To have your medical-related question concerning today's topic answered live on the air, call 513-772-9658. That's 772-WMKV. And now, WMKV Health Scope. We thank you so much for joining us here on WMKV and also on WLHS serving Butler and Warren County. Today we're going to tackle an issue that I don't think we've ever done on HealthScope, and that is, what does an emergency department or an emergency room do, and when do you choose between an emergency department or emergency room and a quick care center, if you will, or an urgent care center? And we have a very special doctor here with us, I believe her first time here at WMKV and WLHS, Dr. Elizabeth Lee-Nellett. She is the medical director of the emergency department at UC Health Westchester Hospital, the assistant professor of emergency medicine at UC College of Medicine. Dr. Lee-Nellett, thank you so much for being in here with us.
Thank you for having me.
Let's talk for just a few moments. First of all, it's always fun to learn a little bit more about the different physicians who come in. How did you come to the area of emergency medicine? I have a feeling many doctors have to at least serve some time in emergency medicine. What hooked you and kept you in that area?
Well, my parents are both anesthesiologists and have always planned on me and my sisters being physicians. My older sister is an orthopedic surgeon. So when I went to University of Michigan, I was in the 7-year pre-medical medical program called Interflex. And they really try and gear us to go into primary care. But I always figured I would follow my sister's footsteps and become an orthopedic surgeon until I found out that she doesn't carry a stethoscope. And I thought, what doctor doesn't carry a stethoscope? Then I did my rotation in emergency medicine and found it fascinating. I mean, what better service could you provide than to be there for people when they are at their most ill and scared?
I was going to say, and this was a question I was actually going to ask a little bit later, but it just seems to fit right now, that if you watch a lot of the TV shows, and we'll talk more about the reality of whether those shows are real or not, but it has to be, it seems to me, one of the most satisfying, yet at times one of the most frustrating jobs that anyone could have.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. I love it because I can really help people when they are scared and they are, you know, worried about their health. And it is so satisfying to be able to reassure them, to come up with a diagnosis, to come up with a treatment plan, to come up with something that makes everybody happy. But it is frustrating to, you know, really invest time and emotion in a patient's care and then have to turn them over to somebody else to take care of and not really know exactly what's going to happen next or what happened to them or what happened to their family members and really trusting somebody else to take them.
And that's such a great point. And I don't want to belabor this. We'll get more into how the actual emergency department works. But to understand really the effect that this has on physicians who deal with this and even nursing staff, I'm sure, because one way or another, that person is eventually going to leave your care and move on to someone else. Or in the worst case scenario, that person may not survive.
Right.
But in that case, that person you only get to see for a short time. This is far different from a family practitioner or even from somebody who may be an orthopedic surgeon, but who may deal with a patient for multiple different situations where you see that person and that relationship evolves. This happens so quickly and you got to get it right. I mean, that's
yes.
that's the stressful part, I would imagine, of it.
It is incredibly stressful because you are taking literally somebody's life and their trust in your hands. You are relying upon them to give you accurate information and to also tell you what their expectations are or what their worries are so that you can address them. You have a very finite period of time to really see them, assess them, examine them, get whatever tests ordered, done, and then, you know, we call it the wrap-up, where you go back into the room and you reassess them again and you go over their results.
Listening skills have to be critical.
Oh, they're huge. They're huge. You really have to read body language. You have to understand what they're saying to you. You know, when I first started, there were things like I fell out. I had no idea that that meant that they had passed out.
Oh, yeah. I did not heard that phrase either.
Yes.
Wow.
Or young people will say that they were out for a second. But a second to me means 1 second. And for them, it can mean anywhere from 60 minutes to one second.
Yes. Yeah. We have Dr. Elizabeth Lean-Ellett here with us. She's from the emergency department. In fact, the medical director at the emergency department at UC Health Westchester Hospital. We'll give more information about how to find out more about UC Health and Westchester Hospital in a moment. We'll also open up the phone lines here in just a few moments in case you have questions for Dr. Lean-Ellett here on WMKV and WLHS. This is one of those chances to speak with a physician and get a real view of something that many of us may think we understand from watching television shows and things like that. But can you give us some idea? I don't know whether you ever watch shows like ER and things like that, or Grey's Anatomy, or there are so many medical shows. And every soap opera is geared around a hospital at some point. But you get these glimpses of the emergency department or the emergency room at a hospital. Can you give us a more realistic version of what's actually happening there? I mean, these writers have to come up with some of the most bizarre either illnesses or predicaments. Two people gored on a pole where if they pull the pole out, one's going to die, one's going to live, and they have to figure out which. Anyway, you know, all these things that they have to make so dramatic for television. Is your life, I hope, maybe a little more boring than that?
Yes, okay. It is much more boring than that. I mean, it is not all lights and sirens and screaming all the time and drama and politics. It tends to be very, at Westchester Hospital, very collegial. We try and keep the atmosphere to be more quiet so that patients who are in pain can do it in a restful environment. So even though we might be very busy in the emergency department, the patient's perception is that it's not, because we are trying to be more quiet. It is not a lot of secret love in closets. There's usually nobody brandishing a weapon. But it is stressful just because of the number of people that are coming, the concerns that they have. The back door is always open for ambulances. So although you might be in the front and not realize that we just had 10 ambulances come through in the last 15 minutes, it can be very stressful.
So, and it is something, though, that I think a lot of people, they go in and they're looking for all this to happen, you know, and in some ways, maybe it distracts them from their pain while they're waiting in a situation. But at the same time, it's not very realistic what we see on television quite honestly, I would imagine. So, what types of cases do you generally see? I mean, I'm sure you see everything from fairly mild instances, but it was a sudden thing that happened, all the way up to literally life-threatening situations.
Oh, definitely. I mean, at Westchester Hospital, we see everything from, you know, ankle sprains, soccer moms injuring themselves, to we are trauma 3 center, so we see major trauma coming through. Heart attacks, strokes, abdominal pain that can be anything from appendicitis to a stomach virus to a kidney stone. We see the whole gamut there.
One of the things I hope we can kind of discuss on this program is trying to figure out, almost doing your own, I guess, triage, for lack of a better term, of knowing when you need the full services of a large emergency department. Which obviously has access to a lot more specialists, more equipment in many cases, but the costs also go up when you have something like that, versus going to, and now we have them literally, it seems like, in every neighborhood. You have one, maybe two, urgent care centers, and they definitely serve a purpose as well. We're not here to say, oh, don't go to an urgent care center, but there are times where an urgent care center might be a better choice for something versus a time where you definitely want to make sure you're going to a hospital emergency department.
Absolutely. I mean, certainly if you are having something that could be a life-threatening illness, like an acute stroke, acute heart attack, if you're having hemorrhaging that you're not able to control, you should probably call 911 and actually be brought directly to the emergency department. But urgent cares definitely have a role as well. Many of those are staffed by physicians, but some are run by nurse practitioners. They do have urgent cares can have some labs, some x-rays and EKG available, and prescriptive availabilities. things like minute clinics or the places that you see in the pharmacies tend to be more a list of services that they can provide, such as if you have an earache or you want a TB test or a tetanus vaccination.
Right. I've even heard things like maybe a sports physical or something
yes.
like that if you need something. Now, you're talking more about when somebody has a symptom of some kind of an illness, but a lot of those clinics will actually are very helpful, I would imagine, for those kinds of things. But the urgent care is generally there, but really, I think, and there's many shades of gray, I have a feeling,
yes.
to this, but if you're really in that situation, it really comes down to if it is a life-threatening situation, the emergency department is definitely the place you're likely going to want to go.
Absolutely.
Yes. So if you're just joining us, by the way, here on HealthScope, a fascinating discussion I think we're going to have in the remainder of the show. And I've already learned a little bit here from Dr. Elizabeth Linellet, from the UC Westchester Hospital. She is a medical director of the emergency department there. She is also the assistant professor of emergency medicine at UC College of Medicine. If you want more information about UC Health and Westchester Hospital, we're not going to give out the emergency room number, but we will give out 513-298-DOCS. You can find out about all the different physicians there and the different services of UC Health and Westchester Hospital, or you can find out more at uchealth.com/Westchester Hospital. If you would like to join the conversation today, maybe you have a question about emergency departments. Again, we may not be able to answer absolutely every question somebody has, but we have a medical director here from one of them at UC Health Westchester Hospital. You can join our conversation today, 513-772-9658. Our toll-free number is 877-772-9658. I want to come back to a term I threw out before, triage.
Mm-hmm.
We've heard about this. I think the first time I heard triage was watching MASH. when they were bringing people in during the Korean War and the MASH unit had to figure out who they could work on or who needed the most work more quickly. How exactly does triage work? Who makes the decisions on who goes first when somebody arrives at an emergency room or an emergency department?
And you are exactly correct. That's exactly how we triage, is based on who needs the most resources and who's the most ill. And it did come out of the need of treating war victims. So it is usually our most experienced nurse who has seen it all, mm-hmm. who goes out there and determines who is having a life-threatening problem, who needs to be brought back first. Of course, if you are in the midst of getting CPR, you go to the head of the line. If you have a toothache, you're probably going to go towards the end of the line, as that is felt to be less life-threatening mm-hmm. than someone who's actively dying in front of us.
And now when most people come in, you were talking about the fact that you have an ambulance entrance and most hospitals, including UC Health and Westchester Hospital, have clearly marked emergency areas. Do most people come into the emergency room, though, with someone else or not in an ambulance? Is that how most people come in?
Yes, the majority of people come in through our front door.
And sometimes these are serious illnesses. Sometimes you might have wished as a physician there that maybe they had called an ambulance. Maybe they could have gotten there more quickly. Or sometimes that ambulance can mitigate some of the conditions because the physicians or the medical professionals in the ambulance can actually do something en route. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct.
So when do we know when to call an ambulance versus when to, you know, have my wife drive me in?
Sure. I mean, if you are having severe chest pain mm-hmm. or you cannot breathe or you're hemorrhaging, you should probably call 911. If you can't even speak in order to convey that you need to go to the hospital, that's probably a time to use 911. If you are if you have the time to Google your symptoms on the computer, you probably have time to call a friend to bring you into the hospital or call your primary care physician to see where you should go.
And what about now? Let's talk about the sports injuries. What happens if somebody comes in and maybe it's really kind of a minor thing, but a lot of people, it's ingrained in us, go to the emergency room, go to the emergency department. What happens if we show up and we have a sprained ankle or, you know, just maybe a pulled muscle or something like that? But boy, it felt worse when, you know, even before I got here. The emergency room, the wait time there is often good in some cases because it hurt when I got here. you know.
Right, right.
sometimes, you know, whatever, if it's a minor ailment, it sometimes is far less acute by the time that they actually get back.
Yes.
Although it's not a terribly long wait time, as I understand, at Westchester Hospital. So I don't mean to imply that all the places are long waits. But what happens if I show up with a sprained ankle or something like that?
We are happy to see you.
Mm-hmm.
We have a door-to-doc time on average of 15 minutes or less.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is impressive.
Yes. We are
from somebody who's had people at emergency rooms and been at it on my own.
Yes. Yeah, in general, you don't go through the triage process. You walk in the door, you say why you're there, and we bring you immediately back to a room where a team of nurses, medics, and the physician will come and see you, assess you, get things rolling. Then the registration person will come in afterwards.
Ah, see, most places that I've been to have been you go to registration first, and they try to kind of ascertain what the situation is.
Right.
But you're sitting there like you're in pain, or, you know, you're scared about something or whatever.
Right.
And that's kind of a neat thing. So this kind of flips it on its head just a little bit.
Yes, we definitely place patients first. And what you want is to get medical attention as quickly as possible. And that's why we bring patients back immediately and then do the administration portion of it afterwards.
If you're just joining us here on HealthScope, we'll talk more about that, about the triage and how people, and I hope that maybe we come away with a better understanding of what the professionals on the other side of that door are going through. Just as we talk about pharmacy and the idea of maybe we can pick the brain here, the medical director of an emergency department, to have everybody be a little more understanding. Yes, you're in pain. Yes, when you're in pain, you tend to be less patient.
Mm-hmm.
Poor choice of terms, I guess, but less understanding about the time wait than you would like. But at the same time, I hope you can understand from this program a little bit more about what's happening. And again, it has to be done quickly, and it has to be done right. It has to be done correctly. And those two are hard to do together. So you have to give people time to do what their job is. And
yes.
So anyway, I'm getting on my soapbox here. But and I've been one of those people who's sitting there going, oh, why can't they get me in? You know, that kind of thing. But I think if we all take a deep breath and we try to understand that you are working as fast as efficiently possible.
Yes.
And is and with accuracy, that's the key
right there.
That's
the most important
thing.
Yes,
accuracy is important. Mm-hmm. We have Pam on the phone from California. Pam, thank you for holding on. By the way, the number is 513-772-9658 or 877-772-9658. Pam, thanks for holding. You're on with Dr. Elizabeth Lean Ellett.
Yes, good afternoon.
Hi.
I just wanted to say I have been on both sides of this issue. When I was sitting in a rocker and I had my hand a little too close to the business end of the platform, and I had a nice nasty cut leading like a sieve, and I went to the emergency room and sat for several hours. You know, I had friends bandage me. On the other hand, a little over 3 years ago, my sweetheart Dave had a stroke. We didn't know it was a stroke. The symptoms had been percolating for about a week, but we didn't get the message until he said, Pam, something's terribly wrong. I can't feel my right side. So I called a taxi. I guess I was calling urgent care. I probably was still in denial. And the driver, whom we know, came in to me on the phone. He said, I can't take him. I don't think he can walk. So I said, should I call an ambulance? He said, yes. Should I call 911? I did. He stayed with us, got the EMTs into the house, got Dave out. We got to the, I went with him. We got to the hospital. They took him right upstairs. They put me in a room. I guess the EMT was in. Dave was, they were talking about his symptoms. So they put him right upstairs, sat me in the patient room. And as I was sitting there, I heard one of the staff say, no triage? And they said, no. And we were told later that evidently the fact that he was numb would cause them to take him right upstairs. And as it turned out, he had had a stroke. And after about maybe 3 hours of testing with breaks, because there are the patients, they did admit it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that, actually, let me ask Dr. Lainellet, first of all, if you want to comment on that, but there are times where, again, some people will say, when in doubt, go to the emergency department.
Mm-hmm.
Is this something, I mean, I know, Pam, as you said, admittedly, you may have been in a little bit of denial, thinking, oh, this can't be as bad as what I'm fearing.
Yeah.
But do you wish now that you had contacted 911 directly on Dave?
Well, absolutely. And if anybody ever says to me a week beforehand, I've lost the last 15 minutes, I don't remember what happened, I should have said right then and there, even if we hadn't called an ambulance, mm-hmm. I probably should have said, let's go get it checked, because he completely lost a lot more than 15 minutes. In his memory, and the next week it was on and off, little dizzy spells, and he had this fear of medical attention, and I did not push it. And I wish that, as it turned out, he's recovering very nicely, but he has lost some, he's blind, doctor, and we both are, and he's lost sensitivity in his right hand, so he can no longer read Braille. But things like that, and it has been a rough recovery, especially losing that sense of touch. But I wish, if I ever hear somebody say, I have had a memory lapse, and when we're not partying, I'm going to say, I've been there too, baby.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, I think we should go, even if you feel silly. And I think I did feel kind of silly. I knew he didn't want to go, so I just let it roll. And the rest, about the next 6 days, where I had come to the point where I said, if you're not better by tomorrow, we're going to the doctor. And that night, it made itself known.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Well, Pam, that's a great testimonial for having things checked early. And I think many of us, and sometimes it's within ourselves, we sense something is wrong, but we don't want to, it's indigestion, or it's, you know, it can't be, maybe I just didn't get enough sleep or something like that. And what you're saying sounds, and again, I'm not a physician, so I'll let Dr. Lainellet comment on it, but it sounds like in this case, at least contacting the family doctor might have been a good first resource at the very beginning of the problem.
Yes. Yes, at least getting a medical opinion. But it sounds like you also experienced both ends of you appreciated the immediate care and attention that your husband received when he came in by the ambulance entrance. But now you also understand why you had to sit in the waiting room when you suffered your own hand injury.
I did, but you know, I believe I understood that then too, mm-hmm. because there were other people. But mm-hmm. until you actually experience, again, having someone who truly needs the attention, you can understand why your hand injury was a little bit less important, quite a bit less important. I got some time off work because I couldn't use my hand to type, but but no, you learn, you know, I did appreciate it a lot more.
Well, Pam, thank you so much for the input today.
Sure, thank you.
Wonderful, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks,
lots
Pam.
Fun.
Thank you. 513-772-9658 or 877-772-9658. You're listening to HealthScope here on WMKV and WLHS. Our very special guest today, Dr. Elizabeth Lainellet. She is a medical director of the emergency department at UC Health Westchester Hospital, assistant professor of emergency medicine at the UC College of Medicine. And we are here talking today about ERs, mm-hmm. emergency departments, and urgent care, and when to do one or the other. Obviously, in that case with Dave, that seems to me a no-brainer, that
yes.
you definitely want an emergency department
on definitely.
Something like that. And even an urgent care would tell you that.
Yes.
I mean, an urgent care is not going to say, oh, yeah, bring him on over. We'll check him out. If you're describing some of those same symptoms. Now, I have to ask a question. Pam mentioned something, and we've seen this in the TV shows, which, again, the TV shows, again, I'm not trying to ascribe that there's any accuracy to that and what actually happens in the ER, but we've seen it in the TV shows where you have the loved one who is there, either arrives later or comes in with the patient, who is literally frantic.
Yes.
They're petrified. They're maybe screaming, yelling, adding to the stress of the situation. Pam even said that they kind of took her off. Now, this was out in California. They took her off to another room mm-hmm. where they could then meet with her and talk to her about what was going on. Mm-hmm. Are there times where it's great to have the family member or a loved one or somebody there, but are there times where you kind of have to separate that person out?
Oh, yes. I mean, the majority of times having friends or family there is great because they are reassuring to the patient. Mm-hmm. It is good to know that you have someone that you trust and you know that's present to speak for you. They're oftentimes able to add details that the patient themselves cannot remember because they're in too much pain or you know, they just aren't able to articulate themselves. But there are some times when we really need to just treat the patient because they are truly in a life-threatening condition where the family member is not helping. They are screaming or yelling or getting in the way of care, where we will ask them to step out for a few minutes while we stabilize the patient, and then we will bring you back in as soon as possible.
Right, because they may be asking, what's happening now? What's happening now? When speed is of the essence,
yes.
Especially... And this comes back to something that you mentioned before as well. When you're dealing with a stroke, we all have learned more in the last 5 to 10 years about the essential nature of treating a stroke very quickly.
Correct.
Any major catastrophic illness like that, or a stroke, a heart attack, mm-hmm. anything. But especially with the stroke, the things that we're hearing in public service announcements and other medical shows is the fact that the quicker you can treat a stroke, the absolute better, the less damage there tends to be.
Yes.
So, again, that's where, and maybe, 2020 hindsight, again, maybe when he started feeling some of those same little affectations mm-hmm. a week or so earlier is a good time to maybe just contact your family doctor and say, you know, I'm a little concerned about this. But it can be difficult, too, when the person, in Dave's situation, she even said he kind of was a little hesitant to go to for a lot of medical help.
Right.
So, but, you know, that's the thing, too. One of the greatest gifts you can give to your loved one is if you aren't feeling well, even if you have a little bit of you're a little unsure about going to the doctor, make the decision to go and not put it on somebody else to try to force you to go
yes.
on something like that. Because the duress that I'm sure Pam was feeling could have, some of it might have been mitigated by the fact that they maybe had seen a physician before and they had been able to talk more about this and maybe even had treatment before the problem ever happened.
Right.
I mean, it's, we're speculating here.
Right.
By the way, our phone number is 513-772-9658 or 877-772-9658. Oh, we have, do we have Pam back? I think we have Pam back. Pam, are you still there?
Yeah, it's me. I just want to put a couple things in.
Sorry.
First for clarification, and because of our situation, we are both totally blind, doctor. And they put me right in the room where he was going to be seen.
Oh, okay.
Excellent.
Okay.
Yeah, oh, yeah, because, well, and I was, in fact, I was too calm.
Okay. See, I thought maybe when you said they ushered you off to another room that maybe you were a little frantic.
No, I should have said, I thought I had said the room where he eventually was.
Oh, okay, sorry.
That's okay, George, but...
I've seen too many TV shows.
But I did hear them say no triage, and I kind of went, okay, this is it, and... No, I can. It's afterwards that I fall apart. I'm as calm as I'm the one who says, "All right, guys," but when it's all over, And the fact that they eventually, we have both been blind since infancy. He since birth, me 4 months later. We called his daughter, and they were having him do things like. Gestures and the doctor said, "Let me see his smile." And his daughter was there, and she said, "Yeah, that's a smile." For him, the facial expression, it was how he learned to smile. And if I had seen him, the cab driver said, "I don't think he can walk." I couldn't see that his eyes were glazed over and
right.
stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So of course I thought we could get by with, and yes, I was. I won't deny that I was in denial because I was thinking, well, you know, they're going to say, well, let's, and then maybe you need to go to the hospital. But no, it was partly our own situation. And I was there from beginning to, I spent a lot of nights in the sleep share.
Oh, I bet.
Very good. So, well, Pam, no, thank you. I didn't mean to imply that you were frantic. I'm sorry.
No. Okay. I almost wish I had been because I should have gotten upset last Friday and said, we're going to the hospital now.
Yeah. Well, God bless anyway. You, Pam. Thank you. And Dave's lucky to have you there with him.
Well, he's a sweetie.
Very good. Thanks, Pam. Thank you. 772-9658 or 877-772-9658 is our phone number. We'll be back with more on HealthScope here in just a moment. By the way, we have our very special guest, Dr. Elizabeth Lean Ellett, from the medical director. She is from the emergency department at UC Health Westchester Hospital, assistant professor of emergency medicine as well at the UC College of Medicine. More in just a moment. The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program or of WMKV Radio, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or its staff and management. Discussion of specific points and general topics on this program are not meant to be taken as specific professional advice. We welcome you back to HealthScope here on WMKV and WLHS. We have Dr. Elizabeth Lean Ellett from the emergency department at UC Health Westchester Hospital. Today we're talking about, when do you make a decision of going to an emergency department or an emergency room and maybe going to an urgent care? And I guess, Dr. Lean Ellett, let me ask this question. Really, is the quality of care much different in the two types of care settings?
Well, I think it depends on what it is, because truly, if you're going to go to like a minute clinic, they only have certain things that they're allowed to treat because of the protocols that they're allowed to follow. Urgent cares might be staffed by an emergency physician, or it might be a family doctor, or it could be a moonlighting physician. In our emergency department at Westchester Hospital, we only have board certified emergency physicians who are trained in emergency medicine working there. So,
and again, not to cast aspersions on an urgent care, but also when you go to a hospital, and again, sometimes the costs are more when you go to the hospital
yes.
emergency department. But one of the reasons those costs are more is that you have access to more equipment, more specialists, more of just about everything.
Yes, 24 hours a day.
Exactly. So, you have to kind of weigh this. If it's a sprained ankle, maybe that urgent care is good enough.
Absolutely.
If it's something where you've got a broken leg with bones protruding or something like that,
yes.
you start thinking, or you have some of the symptoms that we were talking about with Pam and Dave there before. Now, I've also heard about these 911 mobile care services. I don't know much about these. How do they fit in? We talked about driving or being driven to care.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess the mobile care services are literally the ambulances that,
yes.
that actually bring you there. Obviously, if you're concerned about a stroke, heart attack, something that is immediately life-threatening, it sometimes is better, well, it seems like it would always be better in that situation
yes.
to call 911.
It absolutely is better to call 911 because then they can start working on you. They can notify us so that we're prepared. We will drop everything in order to be waiting for you mm-hmm. when you arrive. We'll have our equipment ready. If it's something like a heart attack, many times they are able to transmit that EKG to us so that we can mobilize the angiogram or cardiac cath lab so that they're already on their way or getting ready to take you to the suite. So definitely it would be helpful to call 911 in those cases.
And I think one of the things that I would imagine more emergency departments are doing this, but I think in the old days, you were not far away from where the ambulances came in. If you were just there, you had been driven in with a bad ankle or maybe even a broken arm or something. But you might be right there and see the ambulances come in and all this. And as you said, at least at Westchester Hospital, there's actually kind of a separate area so that you don't necessarily, as a patient waiting to be seen, see all of the trauma.
Yes.
The harsher trauma patients or the heart attack, stroke mm-hmm. patients, people who are literally in fear of immediate loss of life, you don't see that.
Correct.
Now, but that also then, flipping that on its head, while you try to make the person who's in that waiting room a little more comfortable by not having to experience that stress, I think sometimes then people don't always understand. They're saying, well, why am I sitting here with a sprained ankle and I've been waiting for 15, 20, 30 minutes in some cases when you may have just had two victims of a car accident just
right.
brought in the back door.
Right.
And sometimes, you know, they don't know that.
Right.
So what I'm trying to say is I'm not asking the doctor so much as getting on my own soapbox and saying that when we're in that emergency room or that emergency department waiting room, we have to be a little more understanding. If we haven't been seen quickly, there may well be a reason, and it may be someone's life, when I'm sitting here with a pulled muscle or a sprained ankle.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I hope people would at least understand that we don't get to see everything that happens there. And sometimes we don't know what's happening there. And the doctors aren't in the back shooting basketball and things like that, you know.
Right.
You know, this is something that there's generally a reason why we are waiting. And it may be literally a life and death situation on the other side of that door, or the other side of that wall.
Definitely. Because we want you to be seen. We want you to get medical treatment as soon as possible. It is our goal to provide great customer service. But honestly, there are going to be some times where there will be waits because a life-threatening emergency will take precedence, as you would want it to be if it were your loved one.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, I want to ask a little bit about preparation. Now, in an emergency department, preparation on the part of the emergency department is paramount. But for those of us, if I'm out, you know, playing a softball game or something like that, and I slide into the base and I fear I've broken an ankle or something like that, it's not like I've had a whole lot of time to think about, wow, what information can I bring to make the emergency department's life easier? But are there things that we can have at our fingertips that would help the emergency department when we come in for the first triage and then later for the registration, which is kind of a neat way to flip that around. I hope more hospitals will do that. But what are the things that would help you as an emergency department to know about me, the patient, if I'm coming through that door?
Definitely your past medical history, any medications that you're taking, because we don't want to prescribe anything to you that might interfere or harm you as a result. Your allergies to medications are huge. If you've had any previous surgeries, what they might be is very helpful, especially if you come in with abdominal pain and you have a bunch of scars on your abdomen. It'd be helpful to know what's still in there and what's been removed. And your primary care physician's name, at least. We can always look up the phone number. But nowadays, with everybody having their phone on them all the time, what's nice is a lot of patients will come in and they'll have all that information listed on their notes page. And that way they can say, yes, their medications, their doses, how frequently they take it. Because almost everybody has their phone with them, no matter if you're at the softball game or at the grocery store. And it's been hugely helpful.
I know there are members of my family, the last thing before their dying breath would be, the very last thing would be losing the grip on the phone.
Yes. Mean,
that happens. But that's really good. Now, one caveat to that is it's only as good as keeping the information updated,
yes.
Correct?
Yes, absolutely.
But at least it gives you as a physician some starting point.
Yes.
Even if it's not 100% accurate, having 85% of the information beats not having any.
Right. And we will go over it with you. We'll
sure.
definitely ask you, are you still on these medications? Has anything changed since your last visit? At Westchester, we do have electronic medical records. So if you've been there before, we'll have a lot of that information already loaded. But we also want to make sure nothing's changed in the interim.
This also goes back to something else we mentioned. If you don't keep that information on your phone, again, no matter which pharmacy you may be using, if you're using a pharmacy, trying to do all of, if possible, your medications through one. Now, a lot of people work for companies where they have to do some mail order prescriptions and things like that. But you can let the pharmacy that may fill your local things know what those prescriptions are as well. And it's okay for them to have a record of that, because if an emergency department tries to find out, you say, well, all my stuff's at, let's say, a CVS or a Walgreens or whatever, you can actually try to contact them and at least get, again, a snapshot of some of the things that that person is taking medically.
Right. Absolutely. And it's very helpful during the day. Of course, at nighttime, it gets a little bit hairy because they're closed.
But. Well, and also, I noticed, too, going to my family physician, that they update literally every time I walk in that door.
Yes.
They are updating and saying, what are you taking? Even supplements like a vitamin or something like that, they want to know.
Correct.
And that comes back to, again, having the contact for at least your family physician or your general physician, mm-hmm. a primary care person available there. This is fascinating just to learn a little bit about. I never thought about putting all that stuff on my phone.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. Okay, I'm note to self, do this later today. Dr. Elizabeth Lean Ellett is here with us. She is the medical director of the emergency department at UC Health at Westchester Hospital. She also works as an assistant professor of emergency medicine at UC College of Medicine. Do you see things now, as being a professor in mm-hmm. this, do you see things now, and you watch these young pups coming in, and you say, oh, my goodness, you know, I would imagine that the teaching portion of this, or working with new students, mm-hmm. has to be rewarding in itself.
Oh, definitely. It reinvigorates you. You remember the excitement of it all. You know, at this stage in my career, I've pretty much seen everything. Almost nothing that you tell me can shock me anymore. But, you know, these newbies, when they come in, their eyes are wide open and everything that they hear and see is new and exciting. So it just refreshes your career.
But do we have, again, going back to the television shows that so many of us have been indoctrinated mm-hmm. into, I'm sure you have some of the doctors or the physician, the students who are, they're so sure of themselves and everything and all this. And those are the ones that on the TV shows always get knocked down or run by something going wrong and all this. But I'm sure it is literally, when you talk about the collegiality of this emergency department that you work with and also training these young students, mm-hmm. that it really is about teamwork.
Oh,
you
yes.
learn very quickly that when you're in an emergency room, I don't think any one person can do everything,
no.
correct?
Oh, no. I mean, it goes from the person who greets you at the door to the person who wheels you to your bed to the consultants that you call. I mean, the physician staff, I've been working with them since we opened at Westchester Hospital in 2009. We all know each other's names and each other's kids' names. you will be working with them for a long time. So it's all definitely teamwork. We couldn't do it without the hard work of the nurses and the medics there and the secretaries. It truly is a family. And as a result, you might hear us joking a lot to mm-hmm. help alleviate some of that stress, teasing each other about our little quirks, because that's how you have to get through the day, especially if you've had a really tough day.
I've often heard, too, and we have a lot of physicians on this program, and we occasionally will have a nurse or a nurse practitioner on the program, that in some cases there's a little bit of a divide sometimes between physicians and nurses. Mm-hmm. But it seems to me that it's almost like foxhole syndrome. You're all in this
yes.
together.
Oh, definitely.
And it seems to me that the whole collegiality, especially physicians to nurses, mm-hmm. has to be, and what a great learning example that is, too, for people taking that rotation where they're in emergency medicine and you see these health professionals working so closely together.
Oh, yes. I work with some of the best nurses in the country, and they are my eyes and my ears. When I cannot be bedside with you, I trust my nurse to assess you and to ask me questions and to get my attention if you need something, because I'm not going to be able to be bedside with you 24/7. They are awesome. We couldn't do it without them.
I'll play a devil's advocate question here, and this comes back to something we were talking about a couple of questions ago. By the way, if you want to join the conversation today, 513-772-9658 or 877-772-9658. We're talking about emergency departments versus basically the urgent care centers, when to make the right decision about when to go where. And there are a lot of shades of gray here, and some of it's cost-wise for some people, but there are certain things that almost dictate that you should go to the emergency department. We'll recover a few of those here. But let me play devil's advocate for something here, and there might be somebody sitting in that waiting room, and even with your 15-minute door-to-doctor mm-hmm. waiting time, which is a tremendous figure. Mm-hmm. I mean, for people who have sat in some waiting rooms for anywhere from a half an hour to 2 or 3 hours, mm-hmm. Even with that, somebody who's in pain, they're not really as patient as they would like to be or as they might normally be. They're in pain, and they'll say, well, why can't you just give me something now while I'm waiting? Give me a pain pill. Give me something. that's not really a good way to do treatment, is it?
No, no. Without knowing more about you, your past medical history, any sort of interactions to medications you might have had in the past, we don't want to give you an allergic response in the waiting room.
You don't want to compound the issue by creating another one.
Right, right. Exactly.
So again, you know, you have to be, and this comes back to just being a little more understanding when we're in that situation. And the last thing most of us want to be if we're in pain is in that situation. I want to come to the whole area of communication. Mm-hmm. And this is funny because my own father chose my wife, his daughter-in-law, to be his main point of contact for medical history, mm-hmm. simply because my wife remembers everything. I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty sure he had that done, that kind of thing. But communication is so important. And again, it, just in dealing with maybe a planned surgery or an elective surgery or something where you have some time to think about it, mm-hmm. that's stressful enough.
Yes.
But there are times where people are coming into you who literally need treatment now, mm-hmm. and the communication is really, really important. And we mentioned before that family, friends can be very supportive. They're very reassuring to the person. You know, you're going to make it through this. Yes. This is all good. But sometimes those family or friends can be, again, I stress can be, because it depends on their memory and their accuracy,
right.
good information for the physician. Is that correct?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I like to hear from the patient themselves, but mm-hmm. I also will always open it back up and say, does anyone else have anything else to add, or do you need to speak to me separately? I find it very helpful to have friends and family there.
And one of the things, too, is, and I'm sure it's not as often as you might see in some of the television shows, where the person may not be able to speak either because of a medical condition or because they're unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case, that really helps to have somebody there.
Oh, yes. It's yes. huge.
So, and also a big part of this, I would imagine, when somebody comes to you with a trauma is just knowing how this happened or what happened and how it happened might help you decipher the best or quickest way to treat.
Oh, definitely. And it helps, you know, it narrows the list of things that could possibly go wrong, too, depending on the mechanism of injury or what their symptoms were before they went down.
Certainly. One of the things that I learned in the last couple of months, and it was enlightening to me, we had this young lady on our radio station a few weeks ago, was a translator. Mm-hmm. This lady serves as a translator, both in certain legal situations, but also in medical situations. I learned from her side of the translation some of the difficult things that she deals with. One of the things that I learned was the heartbreak that she has to feel as a translator when the doctor is trying to convey to someone who doesn't speak the language maybe a disease or a life-threatening situation that their child may have. She works mm-hmm. with children a lot. And she tried to explain the feeling of trying to detach herself enough so that she can just be the conduit mm-hmm. for this. But translators in hospitals are becoming more common. The need is becoming greater. Is that correct?
Oh, definitely.
What happens if someone shows up and they may know English, but when you're in pain, sometimes your expression or your best description of your pain may not be translating it to English. It may be in your native language.
Right.
What happens when someone comes in to, let's say, the Westchester Hospital Emergency mm-hmm. Department? What happens if somebody comes in and you suspect they need a translator?
We have a handout that we give mm-hmm. them that has various languages written out in their own language so that they can point to which language it is. And then we will get the interpreter phone, which is a two handset connected to one phone mechanism to get the correct translator on the line so that we can find out immediately what's going on.
Because you can, especially in an emergency department, you can't just wait for a translator to show up.
Right.
So you can do this more immediately. So that is something very important to know. And as I understand, most hospitals that have any kind of state money or any kind of federal money given to them have to have some kind of a plan.
Yes.
For having a translator on hand. But I take it that this is something that I don't know how long translators have been available through hospitals, but this has to be a great help in some cases for you.
Oh, Yes, it's a huge help, because otherwise it's just playing charades and pantomiming out, pointing to areas and hoping that you're getting the gist of what's going on. So yes, having a translator is immensely helpful.
And even if the person does speak English, mm-hmm. or maybe speaks some English, again, I don't think the description will be as good or as accurate as it may be if they can speak it in their own language and have someone translate it.
Right.
So,
right.
And that to me, I was fascinated to learn this. It's something I had never thought about because I speak English and, mm-hmm. you know, I'm in an English speaking hospital.
Right.
But for many people, and our population continues to evolve and change, for many people, having that translator there is a critical thing, or at least having the translator available by phone
right.
in an emergency situation is very, very important. So that's also something I asked the translator. I said, well, why everybody's going to say, well, why don't these folks just learn English? And her point was, under duress, when you're in pain, the last thing on your mind is, you know, if I were in pain and somebody wanted me to describe it in Spanish or in French, I'd want to tell them in my language where I can be the most exact and precise that I can be.
Right.
And, you know, when people aren't thinking about that, they're not saying, oh, yes, I should translate this to English when you're maybe in a life or death situation.
Right.
So very, very information or very important. We talked a little bit about what the different information that a patient or family should have when they come in. Again, the phone is a great idea. And we talked a little bit about how the physicians and the nursing staff deal with the stress. And a part of that is kidding and mm-hmm. collegiality. Really, this has to be among one of the most stressful positions in medicine, I would think.
Oh, definitely. Before there was a specific emergency medicine residency or training for it, the burnout rate was tremendous. By the age of 50, a lot of people were done with medicine. But now you learn what to expect and how to manage it. If there's something especially horrendous that has happened, we usually have a debriefing where we'll gather as a group and talk about our feelings and what had happened. And then, of course, there's counseling always available, too.
So the thing we see on TV where I think the TV shows have tried to make it a little more humanistic, if you will. But the other ones where they're just saying, just suck it up and move on to the next room or something. That's not really the best way to go.
No, I mean, we're all human. We all mm-hmm. feel for our patients and their family. You know, many times we will give each other hugs or the patients or the family's hugs as a way of showing our empathy. But it is hard to move on to the next patient. And yet, you know that it is your responsibility to eventually move on to help the next person in need.
Do you have any, maybe some of the most fantastic or some of your favorite moments as an emergency physician?
Oh, I think always the best feeling is at the end of an encounter, having the patient say, thank you so much. You were so nice to me. And I feel that is my job. It is my privilege to treat you when you are ill. And I should be nice to you when you are feeling so bad.
I'd like to, in the last couple of minutes here with Dr. Elizabeth Lee Nellett from UC Health and Westchester Hospital. She is the medical director of the emergency department there. By the way, we can still squeeze in a last-minute call if you'd like, 513-772-9658 or 877-772-9658. I never assume that someone has heard our entire show. I would like to come back for just a few moments. We've already kind of established, anybody who's listened for the last few minutes knows that what we see on television with different emergency room television shows is not accurate mm-hmm. in the real life or the real world. But again, if we could recover some of the main points or some of the rules of thumb of when to go to an urgent care versus when to go to an emergency department. Could you share with us a few of those just for people who may have joined us late?
Oh, definitely. If you feel like you are having chest pain where you think you might have a heart attack, if you have stroke-like symptoms, if you think that you are going to need surgery immediately for like appendicitis, or if you can't breathe or you're hemorrhaging, you really need to come to our emergency department. If it's something like an ankle sprain or a rash you've had for a month, that can probably go to an urgent care or your primary care physician or even other facilities that are available.
And also then, so when some of these situations hit, some of the more severe ones, the more potentially life-threatening ones,
mm-hmm.
that's best to call 911.
Yes.
Maybe it's best on a sprained ankle, you call your family physician and see what he or she might recommend.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
definitely.
And, you know, it's one of those things. You brought up a great point before. If you have time to go and research it and Google it or WebMD it or one of these, if you've got time to go do that, it may not be ER or emergency department material unless it fits some of those criteria, the chest pain, the shortness of breath. Right. And Pam brought up some great things before where literally a loved one was losing time, you know, and things like that. Faintness, passing out is, you know, I mean, it could be something as simple as low blood pressure, but it could be a symptom of something else. So when in doubt, it's probably better to err to the more expensive yet more comprehensive method, which would be the emergency department.
Right.
Very good. Yes. Dr. Lee Nellen, thank you so much for taking time here with us today. I hope people have a better glimpse of the real physicians behind the real emergency departments. And I just wanted to ask one more time, you call it door to doctor at Westchester Hospital. This to me is an amazing number. What is the average?
On average, it's 15 minutes or less.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a good example for other hospitals to try to meet, and that's fantastic. So, again, if you are in that 15-minute or longer waiting period, because, again, with an average, some may be a little longer than that, try to understand that there may be a reason why you may be waiting, and it could be someone's life at stake, maybe the reason why you're still sitting.
Absolutely.
It's so important. Dr. Lee Nellett, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you to UC Health once again, Westchester Hospital especially. If you want to find out more about any of their physicians and services, 513-298-DOCS, D-O-C-S, or uchealth.com/Westchester Hospital. You've been listening to WMKV and WLHS and HealthScope. Thanks for being with us today. You've been listening to WMKV HealthScope. Join us again next Monday at 1 p.m. for another edition of WMKV HealthScope on 89.3 WMKV Reading, Ohio.